Robin Miller, this is our first week in IndyCar news after an Indy 500. I've had a day or two to catch a little bit of rest, decompress, think. I actually started thinking a little bit.
Bull.
I know. Well, we recapped the event in about 10 or 11 minutes on our new and fun racer post day, whatever you hell you want to call it, video. We'll get to go a little bit deeper on a few things here. All right, brother, we got to see Takuma Sato, a side of him that I don't know if we'd ever fully experienced. Happy dude, super happy dude. One of the most gracious Indy 500 winners I can ever recall. What comes to mind? When we talk about him, Robin, it's about, hey, he came close and then he hit the wall. He completed all 200 laps this time and came away with, what, $2.4 million?
Well, I think Michael Andretti said it best. He said, after he crashed in the first practice session or second practice session at St. Pete, Brian Herta set him down and said, look, just relax. You're not going anywhere. You're on our team. Whatever they said to him worked because he finished fifth in the race and he's been pretty patient. And I had dinner with A.J. Foyt last night, and he's like, that's exactly why I hired him, because the guy's always been fast. He just had trouble getting it to the finish. He won Long Beach for us. He almost won Brazil. We were leading the points. And he said, I thought that was going to be his turnaround season, and it turned out not to be. He ended up finishing 17th in the points. The guy's always been fast. He's always been as likable as any driver and as gracious and as humble. And it was a popular victory. One of the more popular victories I think we've seen since maybe Tony Kanaan. So just a cool story.
Yeah, and I definitely have a new level of respect for him, knowing that he had to hold off Helio Castroneves. And pressure's always been the thing with Takuma, right? It's either pressure or bad decisions. Frankly, it could be one leading to the other. Intense pressure leading to a bad decision. Trying too hard. I mean, the one thing he's never been accused of, Robin, is trying too little. It's always been trying too hard, attacking way too much at the times where he didn't need to, sticking the thing in where it doesn't belong. That's a different problem. But it was just nice to see Takuma charge to the front, make some daring passes that stuck. And when he had Helio breathing down his neck, even earlier in the race, when he was fighting with a lot of people to move forward, the guy just kept making smart passes, determined passes, and it all worked. And it's kind of like what you said. If the guy can just start getting to the finish line, he does a bunch of great work. It just doesn't always coincide with the official end of the race. Sometimes it's three laps in. Sometimes it's a halfway point. Count me in as one who really hopes that something changes within Takuma.
When you're 40 years old, it's hard to change your driving style, but it looks like whatever they told him, it's working. So it's certainly possible. On the ovals, I mean, he's always been quick on ovals anyway, and with Honda's perceived advantage, he could win a couple more this year.
I guess if we look elsewhere within the Andretti team, one thing we didn't get into too much at the end of Sunday was, what happened to Marco? We certainly saw every other member of the, I guess you'd call it the veteran Andretti team, Jack Harvey and the Michael Shank entry. They just had a not fun event overall, and he got taken out with debris from Connor Daly's crash. But Marco is the one where I think a lot of us before the race, even the odds makers, were saying, oh yeah, this kid's coming. Had Brian Herta on the timing stand for the first 500. Just didn't seem to be there.
We talked to Herta. Remember, we were standing there in Victory Lane talking to him, and Marco had some kind of problem on restarts. The thing wouldn't run. It took like two laps to get it going. So I think that was his big, I think that must have been his big issue.
Herta was telling us that there was something, I guess you could say, genuinely wrong from an acceleration standpoint. And it was happening before the race as well. And Marco's complaining about it, that when having to try and pick back up the speed quickly
condition.
And restart style, the throttle, and for whatever reason, his motor, his drivetrain, electronics, not sure what was causing it, but it was like he was stuck in sand as everyone was taking off. And he said it kept happening over and over and over again. So, it's one thing if you go, well, you blew the restart, you missed when everyone else took off. That doesn't happen. That'll happen once. It might happen twice. But when it happens every single time, that it's not the driver. There's something weird happening. So the fact that he noted it before the race, the fact that it apparently kind of ruined his race and he would lose positions on the many restarts that we had, then had to climb back forward, I guess that explains a couple things there. Another cool thing that was associated, Robin, with the Shank team, Michael Shanks, chief mechanic, Adam Rovazzini, ex-Ganassi guy, who's a similar role on his Acura sports car team, won a really cool award that means something to old bad mechanics like you and I.
The Clint Bronner Award, buddy, for the best mechanic. And his dad, Gary Rovazzini, has been with Ganassi for probably 30 years. And I met Gary back in the 70s, late 60s and 70s. He worked for Tom Sneva and Mike Mosley, and he was one of Judd Phillips' right-hand man. So the talent tree was passed on to Adam, and he's a good kid. Good for him.
Last Andretti note, just more of a thank you, actually. The Andretti PR team, Ryan Rigsby, heck, even Sylvia from McLaren, but the entire Andretti team was really accommodating all month long, and not specifically talking about Fernando, but just in general, they were absolutely under the gun, made a lot of people available so we could do some cool stuff at racer.com. And also big thanks to Eric Bretzman, who was willing to grab the mic and answer a lot of silly questions I was asking on the technical side, and helped us to bring more of the sports technology to the new international fans that were looking into Indy for the first time. So pretty cool there.
Well, the thing you had him do with the steering wheel was one of the most, it was one of the most popular things that the mailbag people that had been asking for years. What do those things in the steering wheel mean? So he did a good job. I even told him race morning. I said, hey, that was really cool. Thanks for doing that. And he said, yeah, I had fun. So, and Ryan Rigsby, they had a lot of things to juggle, and they did a good job all month.
Oh boy, Scott Dixon. Good Lord. I don't know how he came out of that crash with just an injured ankle. I mean, that in and of itself is a miracle. You figured the guy was going to be, you know, broken ribs, whiplash, like you would. I mean, just look at the violence of that crash. The fact that the worst thing Dixie had was limping away from the crash. Yet another reason to thank IndyCar, Derek Walker, everybody that's contributed to making this Stellar DW12 just incredibly, incredibly safe. And he's ready to do the duel in Detroit. So saw a little video of him working out, getting ready for that with his walking boot on. So Dix is ready to come back and continue his title push. Tell me about the TV ratings, Robin. That I think was, of all the super positive things, man, that the TV rating for the Indy 500 was a unquestioned kick in the nuts.
Well, it's, if you don't like that, I mean, I give up. I mean, it had everything you want, everything a casual fan wants: close finish, crazy crashes, lead changes. It was just, that's exactly. I mean, it was, other than a couple of stretches at 20 laps, it was a damn good race from start to finish. And to have a 3.6 is so despondent. It's just depressing. Yeah, it beat NASCAR's 2.8, but that's, I thought for sure it would be at least a 4.5. I thought Alonso himself would be worth a point, but I don't know what the answer is, Marshall. It's not connecting with the public anymore, and even the casual person didn't watch it, which that's what you get. You got to have the casual fan tune in once a year to get it to a 5 or, you know, a 4.65, something like that, and they're not watching. They're probably pissed off. They're probably pissed off that Ed Jones ain't Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, well, that was the next thing we were going to talk about, but I was just going to close quickly on the TV thing, and you only have to listen to IMSA Radio or the 24 Hours of Le Mans with Radio Le Mans to understand the value of having someone in the booth who brings supreme excitement, whose voice will raise, someone who will build tension and a dynamic feeling of what's going on, so that even if you're listening by radio, you feel like you're there. It's an electric thing that's taking place. We see that happen on NBCSN, with Formula One stuff, IndyCar stuff, great broadcast team. We hear that in Indy Lights when Kevin Lee is at full steam. It's a little strange for me to tune in and watch Indy 500, which I did when I got home, and feel like you're at an insurance seminar. And so-and-so is going into the lead. And there, when someone made a pass into turn two. And You cannot, and these are friends of ours, so we're not trying to just be mean and pick on your favorite acronym, ABC, but good Lord, if you have your biggest event, you cannot have folks presenting it like you're in a library and you need to be quiet so you don't get yelled at. Imagine the Super Bowl being brought to you by librarians. no one would watch. So I'm not surprised that the number is low. It just, it's painful to see it that low. So of all the things IndyCar has to do in the future, we know that their TV contracts are coming up for renewal / finding another one. All I can tell you is that in an age where excitement and hype and just dynamic experiences are expected in everything, I have to believe that IndyCar realizes whomever is going to get the keys to the Indy 500 starting in 2019 and beyond, man, we need some energy. We need to make it feel special. You and I know it's special. Hopefully the folks listening know it's special. But if you aren't a big fan and you feel bored listening to it brought to you, of course you're going to turn away.
Well, that there's no doubt that I just don't know that. I don't know that that keeps people from not watching it, though. I mean, I just, if you're a casual fan of racing and you're watching that, you got to be going, my God, they're five wide going into turn one. Well, I got to watch this. So, yeah, there's not much of excitement level, and I think everybody's hoping that NBC buys ABC out and gets on board next year, which would really be cool if that could happen. And I think there's a chance. I don't know if there's a big chance, but I think there's a chance. So it is the biggest event, and it should be. You know, when they have the first lead change of the race and they show the empty front straightaway instead of the pass, I mean, they got people doing the race. You know, Terry Ligner's the best, and he's not working at ABC. And you have somebody like that directing and producing that knows what the hell to look for, and have people that, you know, like Townsend and Paul, and whether it's Lee or Kevin or Rick Allen. I mean, you're right. I mean, you have to sound excited, and they usually are, because there's so many crazy things going on the track. I mean, they're not making it up.
And that's the whole point. It's not as if you have to work hard to present the 24 hours of Le Mans, 12 hours of Sebring, Indy 500 as something that, you know, is exciting when it is really a snooze fest. It's damn exciting. You just have to want to convey that. And yeah, to your point, everyone you just mentioned, you know, I'm team Terry 100%. Terry Ligner, that man is just, he is a badass. And yeah, like you, I hope that he, Rich O'Connor, and a bunch of others have the keys to IndyCar's full television future. All right, so back to Ed Jones. I was talking with a friend today who works for an auto manufacturer, who said he was on a conference call. They were talking about last weekend's Indy 500, and was just mentioned in that conference call, hey, and you know, what do you think about Ed Jones getting Rookie of the Year? And he said everyone on the conference call went silent. Well, it turns out my friend had watched the race on Sunday. I don't, you know, was probably busy with family or something on Monday, mowing the lawn, doing whatever, and hadn't really checked in to see how the banquet went, and just automatically assumed that based on what he saw on Sunday, that Ed Jones won Rookie of the Year. Not just because he finished third, not just because he was the highest finishing rookie, but, you know, he's driving for Dale Coyne, not Andretti, didn't have a full private test day there at Indy. So anyways, I thought it was funny he said they all had to inform me, Ed didn't win Rookie of the Year. And then you speak with Dale Coyne, who is a pretty mellow guy, but it sounds like he blew his top. How do we get here, brother? I know Fernando is the popular vote, the easy vote, but maybe not the most studied vote, in my opinion.
Well, we anointed Ed Rookie of the Year as we signed off last Sunday night. Here's the thing. Alonso was fabulous. Ed Jones was fabulous. Make him co-rookies of the year like Bobby Marshman and Parnelli Jones or Larry Rice and Rick Mears. That's the way to do it. It's the easiest way to do it. The thing that I think is, that concerns some people is, heard some rumblings that, you know, we usually vote on the Rookie of the Year right after the race. Well, I think the Speedway, somebody at Speedway forgot all about it till Monday morning, and I think that's when we got those panicked emails. And who knows if the ballots were counted. I haven't talked to anybody yet that voted for Alonso. So if that's, you know, if they just made Alonso Rookie of the Year, that would really piss me off. But co-Rookie of the Year is a no-brainer. Nobody would have had any problem with that. And the kid drove, not only did he drive, he drove from the back to the front after he lost his wing he got his rear wing knocked off and came all the way back and then had a hole in his nose. And still finished. I mean, if you don't have that hole in his nose, you got a chance to win the race.
And I think your interview with Coyne was insightful as well. Ed was ahead of Fernando when Fernando broke. Right? So, and we're talking with 21 laps to go. Ed finished third at the end of those 21 laps. So I'm just saying that, you know, good on you for leading, what did Fernando lead, 27 laps or something like that earlier in the race. But as we're getting down to go time, yeah, the kid who finished third didn't luck into it. The kid was ahead of Alonso. So again, I've already argued with a lot of people on social media, which I try not to do, but occasionally I do because I go against my own little personal mandates. But yeah, that to me is a genuine bummer that for whatever reason, whether it was our friends in the media or someone else on high who decided, I thought that we let the kid down. And the money, whatever it was, the 50 grand, that's not going to change his life. Even the title, Rookie of the Year, isn't going to change his life. The kid should go on to a really good career. You just like to see work honored. If there's an award to honor people for work, you just like to see it go to someone who, given the circumstances, given the disparity in equipment and everything else that I mentioned, I'm going to make sure the right person gets what they deserve. All right, well, we're close to wrapping up our 500 conversation. Connor Daly, I mean, I think the sky is running out of cartoon anvils to rain on the kid. He crashes out, takes out Jack Harvey, and I was just looking at the points. Montoya with two races, the GP of Indy and the Indy 500, is currently ahead of Connor Daly in the points. And he's actually only 7 points away from overtaking Spencer Pigot and Charlie Kimball. So, you know, half of that is credit to good old Monterior showing up and just being the badass that he is. But when you've done every race of the season, when you've done 6 races and you are behind someone who's done 2, and that guy didn't actually even win either of those, that just tells me that, man, we thought last year sucked for Connor in terms of getting, you know, the due results that we thought he was able to get. I don't know how this gets turned around, brother, but this is getting bad quickly.
Well, I mean, there's 11 races to go, and, I mean, he's had some, you know, I mean, Spencer's the one that's really, I mean, he should have had 3 good finishes, great finishes, really, and you know, once he spun, and then a couple times he had problems that weren't of his own doing, and Charlie's had a couple good runs. But as far as Connor goes, he's good in the races, and he races good, and I think him and his engineer are starting to click. So, I mean, I still got hope that they'll pick things up. It's just that he's had some bad breaks, and he lost control the other day. I'm not sure what happened, but just, yeah, it's certainly not been the start he wanted with AJ Foyt, let's put it that way.
Max Chilton, our boy led 50 laps, 25% of the Indy 500. He told you he thought it was the best race of his career, told me he thought it was the best. He thought the GP of Indy coming into the 500 was his best performance. So for a kid that comes to IndyCar with the F1 pedigree, which I think some folks would automatically equate to, he's the best in the world. Haven't seen that. It's been a little bit hard to tap into, but to his credit, the kid really showed up this month. You had a chance to have dinner with him and Dario. What did he say? What is he thinking? And do you like the fact that we're seeing Max kind of start to deliver a little bit?
Well, it's kind of cool because I brought a bunch of old Indy 500 pictures and we showed him, and I think he's kind of like Dario a little bit. I don't think he really had a lot of interest in Indy, but I think it's starting to get a little more interesting, especially after you lead 50 laps, and he's like, he goes, I was really happy after the race. And he goes, now the more I think about it, the more mad I'm got that I had a chance to win that thing. And he said, I'm going to keep coming back till I win it. So I think it was kind of a career change for him. I think he went from maybe not really caring to really caring about, I want to come back. I see what it means. I've felt what it's like to lead the thing late into the race. I was ahead of a bunch of pretty good damn oval drivers. So I'd say it's probably the best thing could have happened to him because, you know, I don't know Max. You know, Max is a pretty quiet kid. He's a nice kid. I don't know much about him, but he was he had a good time at dinner. Dario said he had a good time at dinner tonight because we had Steve Shunk, and, you know, we were all and Dave first, and we were all rambling through all our Indy 500 memories and stats, and Max is like, yeah, man, those guys really care about it. They really like to race, and I think that's what it takes. Dario really didn't care about the Indy 500 his first year or two, and then suddenly a light went on, and he loved it.
Oh, if we can turn that light bulb back on in his brain. Tony Kanaan to Le Mans. How do you like that? The old man, you know, we know it pisses him off when you call him that. The old man headed to Le Mans for the first time at 42 years old. And even cooler, his dear friend Rubens Barrichello will be making his Le Mans debut as well in a different class. But I love Tony's kind of fighting spirit that he's already embroiled in an IndyCar championship, trying to win that thing, doing well now. And, sure, let's go to France, a place I've never seen, never driven around there. Let's go for it. I love that about him. What do you think, brother? I mean, do you think this is the right call, knowing that, you know, we don't know how many full seasons he's going to have left in IndyCar to focus on the championship, but do you think this is a bucket list, do it if you get the chance, no matter what? Or, hey, you're doing well in the IndyCar championship this year, maybe you should just focus on that, because who knows how many more times you're going to be top five.
No, I think like your story on him the other day on Racer, that's something he's always wanted to do, and there's no race that weekend, no reason he can't do it. And it's interesting because I didn't realize Rubens didn't. That's kind of cool, too, that Rubens is going to get to run. And Foyt said at dinner last night, he's going. I said, you hate that food. What do you mean you're going? Well, Edsel Ford's a good guy, and I really like him. I'm going to go. So now Anthony Joseph's going. So now Gurney will probably have to charter a plane, which would really be cool if we could get Gurney over there, too.
Yeah, well, I need to talk to the Big Eagle and see if we can make that happen. So you broke the big post-race story. That is one Esteban Gutierrez joining Dale Coyne Racing to replace for our boy Sebastian Bourdais, who's back home now thanks to one team owner in the paddock, very selfless team owner, who made his private jet available for Seb and his family to come home. So Seb's rehabilitating at home and sounding as strong as ever. But we have Esteban Gutierrez in the car for Seb for at least Detroit Robin, or what did Dale tell you about whether that might continue? And you think there's any bigger picture stuff maybe going on here with a well-known Mexican Formula One driver?
Dale said, I can't talk about it, so you knew it was true right away. And
hey, Dale, when you say you can't talk about it, just so you know, you may as well talk about it because we know what you mean, and it turns out to be true. But
I said, do you want one guy to run both ovals and road courses? Well, that would be my idea. Yeah, that would be my choice. I just can't imagine turning this kid loose for his oval track debut at Texas. Can you? I just can't imagine that.
Oh, my God, no. If you like him, no.
Yeah, I think James Davison's still in the picture for that. I really do, because he did a good job at Indy for him.
Oh, that kid's crazy, but in the best kind of way. I mean, that kid's fearless. Granted, he has no friends on the racetrack. I mean, he's probably next to Charlie Kimball the most hated IndyCar driver around. But I mean, look, hated or not, that kid goes forward. So I'm with you. I wouldn't mind seeing Davison in the car or any, you know, the other ones we've spoken about many times, Matty Brabham, Steph Wilson, etc., on some of the ovals. But I kind of like the idea of Gutierrez, knowing that IndyCar is looking at trying to do something in Mexico with a race. Here's a kid who has carried, you know, some significant funding behind him, former Ferrari factory driver. How's this? If there's money behind the kid to do more than just Detroit, and I'm looking at Dale Coyne Racing next year, man, I know I'm getting way ahead of myself here, but a three-car team with Bourdais, Gutierrez, and Ed Jones, that's when we start talking about Dale Coyne as a powerhouse program in ways we never have.
Well, and, you know, there's no doubt Gutierrez brought money, so it just depends probably on how much and if he likes it and he has any success. But, you know, I mean, Ed Jones used his Indy Lights money to get his foot in the door, and hopefully his performance is going to count for something. But you know how this business is, that there's no guarantees. So everybody almost has to bring money, at least 75% of them. So it'll just be interesting, like you said. I mean, I'd love to see us go back to Mexico City and run that road course, but and if you had a local hero like this guy, you'd have a chance to get a good crowd.
And if we went back to Mexico, then you would have an actual reason and could justify telling the story about one IndyCar team owner you saw throwing up there, but we'll save that for another day, friends.
That's a blackmail story later on.
All right, so let's wrap up here on two last items, brother. We got Detroit this weekend, the duel in Detroit. I won't be there because I've been gone for six straight weekends and I like marriage. So that's me. You have your, is it your 50th high school reunion?
Yep, 50th high school class reunion.
I didn't know they had reunions for GED classes, but that's pretty awesome.
Well, it was 864 kids in my senior class and I think I ranked 714. I think I was Babe Ruth. 714, baby. I wasn't last.
Wow. Well, little unknown story. I think my wife knows this and the guidance counselor. I got yanked on graduation day from Carlmont High School in Belmont, California. Walked down the pathway behind some trees onto the grass where your parents are seated and whatnot. I actually got, just as I was about to turn the corner, I got yanked by one of the guidance counselors because apparently I was one or two credits shy, or they believed, because I cut so many classes as a high school senior to actually go to races and do that kind of stuff that they were convinced I shouldn't be graduating. So it took about 5 minutes for them to get that straightened out. But I think of however big our graduating class was, Robin, I was definitely last. But all that aside, we're going back to a street course. It has some fresh pavement from last year, but it still tends to be a bit rough and tumble. We saw the Hondas definitely shock and surprise folks coming out of the gate on the street courses earlier this year. I think we're going to see at least one of the two races, Chevy's three-race win streak going into Indy being broken. I don't think Chevy's going to continue that run that they had, but who knows? And B, I'm not sure where this is going to leave some of the people who thought that they were going to be coming out of Indy in a really strong position. We got Elio first in the championship. I don't think many folks thought that was going to happen. Takuma's third, Dixon's fourth, but, you know, is his foot going to be an issue or not? Rossi is fifth, TK is sixth, Power's down in seventh now. Ed Jones is ninth. I mean, I'm not sure who's going to win this weekend in either round. I do think Ahana's going to pick up one, but just a little bit strange coming out of Indy with the points shuffled a little more than maybe we thought. How about you?
Well, I think Castroneves will win one of them. He should have won last year, and I think RP kind of hosed him on their pit strategy. And a guy we didn't really talk about that really had a good race at Indy that's usually good at Detroit's Graham Rahal. I mean, he got all the way up to third. He got all the way up to third at Indy, I mean, from 18th to third, and he would have been right there at the end too, and then I think he had a flat right rear, and that was pretty much ended his day of being competitive. But he's finished, I think, second and third at Detroit, so he might be my sleeper pick. And Elio will be one of them, and Graham will be one of them.
I like that. All right, well, let's close on this. And this is not necessarily racing-related stuff from the month of May, but give me one or two or a couple of just your favorite memories from the month. We had a couple of fun dinners. We had some great friends of ours stopping by the media center. We had some fun pictures that we took. Outside of the competition and all that stuff, what are a couple things that made you smile during the month of May?
Well, getting to drive around with AJ in the museum to look at his exhibit for 2 hours was probably the highlight. And then you and I getting to go through there with your camera and our recollections of his career. That was coupled 1 and 1A for me. Those were the two best. And then just I think the fact that the race was again such an entertaining race, and I think that's those are the things I like the most about it.
I think the team dinner with Uncle Bobby Unser and Parnelli Jones, and just watching these two old friends reconnect, which, you know, it's not as if they haven't seen each other, but just it's just cool to be not only in the presence of greatness, but just to watch the greatness those two friends really enjoy one another, give each other a hard time. That was a lot of fun. Mario coming up, you, for folks, everyone who said, Robin or Marshall, where do I get one of those shirts, you know, one of those sweaters of Parnelli in the turbine and what you can't see in the background, Mario flipping him off, which did happen in 67, or the Mount Rushmore, just watching people's reaction to the shirts that you and Steve Shunk made and handed out was awesome. Mario coming up and recreating the flipping of the bird with me and a few others, you guys. That was so much fun. But for me, honestly, and not to sound too soft here, but watching Sato, watching him realize that this was, for a guy who has earned a lot of scorn and a lot of criticism for being a guy who's in a seat, not because he is necessarily the best, but because of his connections, to see that weight lifted off his shoulders, to feel that, you know, that noose that had been, it was loose, but that noose kind of around his neck of, yeah, right, this guy's just truly filling a spot on the grid, nothing more. Knowing he knows his reputation. I mean, you know, he's not dumb. Seeing this guy stand there and feel like, you know what, this is what I'd always dreamed of. Life is good. I'm respected. Everyone's running up to me and congratulating me, and it's heartfelt. Just really cool to see a guy realize all the things that are positive, all the really cool things that can come from our sport when you do something like winning the Indy 500. So definite cool end of the month there. And then also listening to you badger and berate Chucky when he comes around selling newspapers every day. That's...
Well, he has it coming, damn it. The other thing that was great, I forgot, is the Japanese media, when they were jumping up and down at the end. Those guys have traveled zillions of miles, followed Sato ever since he started racing, and they were as happy as he was. So that was kind of cool, too. And Jeff Olson did a really cool story on the IndyCar website about it. It was okay to cheer in the press box for Sato because of what he'd been through and what the Japanese media had been through covering him.
Hell, yeah. I mean, he's making millions all these years despite the bad results. These guys are just logging. I mean, you want to talk about guys that are truly nodding off Friday morning at Iowa or whatever because they've just flown 8,000 million miles and they're jet-lagged and 27 time zones off, all to cover Takuma, who, for all we know, is going to crash 7 laps into the race, and that entire trip will be wasted. And then they'll go home and come right. I mean, you talk about folks who've been on that journey and sacrificed, I'd say, a heck of a lot more than him. There's a reason that so many of us were congratulating Amano-san, and you name it, all the folks who've covered him for so long, because this was truly a win for all of the Japanese media who have supported Taku for so long. So, all right. Well, you've got some non-racing stuff to do this weekend. I've got some non-racing stuff to do, although I will be covering the IMSA race remotely. But
you're going to be writing about the IMSA races, and I'm going to be writing about the IndyCar races from our computers. So we'll still be in there, son.
And we're obviously, Robin and I aren't going to be at Detroit, but at Texas. Our little end-of-day video rambling will continue. So, anyways, until next week when we have the Detroit race to wrap up, I'm Marshall Pruitt, that is Robin Miller, and thanks for listening.